Welcome to episode 166 of the Gambots Podcast. I'm your host, Eric, and this is my co-host.
It's Christian.
On this week's episode, Christian, you and I both watched the documentary on Netflix called Lover, Stalker, Killer. This was directed by Sam Hopkinson, and I didn't recognize anything else he has worked on. I've not watched a Netflix documentary in a while. I saw the one about the Pepsi plane case. I don't know if you watched that one or not. That was from a year or two ago. And then the last one I really remember watching that was true crime based was that terrible one we watched about a hotel in LA. Watching that, the ending of that basically made me want to stop watching the Netflix true crime documentary because I thought they were kind of crap. I thought, was it Making a Murderer? I can't remember if we talked about that, but I also thought that one left out a lot of stuff too.
Yeah.
I wish I had looked up to see if this one had left out anything, but it seemed that they had a pretty clear-cut case for the killer, so I did not look into it more. So what is the premise of this documentary, Christian?
So, yeah, this is a story that I was a little familiar with. I'd seen, I think, like a TikTok about it at some point a while back, but it's this guy who gets involved in this kind of love triangle where he's dating somebody new and his ex finds out, and then all of a sudden the girl that he'd been dating, the new one, kind of goes crazy. He's talking about, like, we need to move in together, and when he's like, hey, we've only been dating 2 weeks, she goes off the grid completely and then resurfaces as, like, a stalker. Nobody's seen her or, like, seen her in person in, like, weeks and then months and then years, but she's, like, this omnipotent presence in his life and the life of the ex that had shown up at a certain point, and she's, like, terrorizing them. Or is she?
Well, that's the thing, man. To anyone listening, this is going to be full spoilers because I don't know how we'd necessarily talk about this without revealing the twists and turns in this. But Christian, I cannot remember names. Was the one girl's name Kara? The girl who was the
alleged stalker at first.
The alleged stalker, yes. And I can't remember the other girl, the other woman's name.
Liv, I think.
Liz.
Yeah.
So when you say love triangle, I actually think that's doing a disservice to the amount of crazy that's involved in this.
Yeah.
This guy had gone on a few dates with a girl, was very open with her. I say girl, it's a woman. They were in their 30s.
Yeah.
This woman was very open with her that he was not looking for anything serious, had not seen her for a while, was with another girl, and then, like, it took a turn. Like, it is hard to say that there was any sort of triangle going on. He had gone on maybe 2 dates with someone else before the stalking occurred. Like, it was crazy.
Yeah. And it even, like, he even takes time in the documentary to say, like, they were all in the same room together, but only for maybe like a minute.
Yeah.
Was like an elongated, like, oh, will they, won't they? Oh, there's drama and stuff. Yeah. Like, they bump into each other momentarily.
So, this may be offensive to some pet owners out there, but Liz, they were like, she has 2 dogs or whatever, normal pets, and then they said she has a boa constrictor, and I just immediately said, red flag. And for the whole movie, I was like, I feel bad for, you know, drawing assumptions on this lady, but then I felt vindicated at the end.
So the crux of this story, the reason that it's so crazy is not that, like, oh, this Kara bumped into Liv for like a minute and then decided to go full crazy. Like, the crazy part is that, yeah, Liv apparently was behind everything the whole time.
Immediately murdered this person.
Yeah, killed Kara almost immediately. And then, yes, was sending herself threatening text messages and sending the guy messages and emails. At one point, they said he was getting something like 160 emails a day.
Dude, she burned down her own house and killed her own animals.
Yeah, boa constrictor and all.
Yeah, a poor snake, innocent bystander. But yeah, that's the thing, is it's insane because during the whole movie, they say documentary, you're getting these stories about Kara, and it's like she knows these things that you're like, how does she even know that? And it's, you know, this guy, this girl that he's kind of dating, she's just messing with him. It's, he said once he found out, it was like a total, you know, mind F to him. He that is gaslighting to an extreme.
Yeah, that's absolutely crazy.
Could you imagine if you dated someone for years and then it turned out that they killed someone who they met briefly and then have been just messing with you, like tormenting you?
Yeah, terrorizing you for, my God. I think it's funny that I was more shocked by 160 emails a day than the fact that she burned her house down.
Who has time for all these emails? And
that's what I'm saying. Like, she had to have set... man, that's crazy.
It's like an obsession thing. It has to be. Boy. And then he gets out of her life. She must have been trolling all of the dating profiles to notice him dating again to get back in his life. She was like, he goes, I invited Kara back into my life. It's like the ghost from Paranormal Activity or something. Like, you get attaches to you.
Yeah, because well, this was the craziest, maybe the craziest part to me, was that they moved. Like, they broke up, him and the crazy one that he didn't know was crazy yet. She's been stalking herself and stalking him and sending them both all these threatening messages and burning her house down and keying her own car. And then they break up because she's like, this is too stressful for me.
Yeah.
It was her whole, like, you can stop at any time. Then he moves, sets up a new dating profile in his new town, and somehow matched with her again under, like, a fake profile.
Yeah, which leads me to, like, wonder if she just had dating profiles everywhere and just messing with a lot of people. The biggest twist, and I thought this movie was going to go in a direction I was not anticipating at all, was when they were able to finally track her IP address, and it was someone in, like, the sheriff's office who worked under the guy investigating it. And I was like, oh my God, was this a jilted lover who's just, like, I thought it was going in a completely different direction.
Yeah. I liked the tech guy. He was probably my favorite guy in this. And he's like, yeah, it's the IP address of, like, one of my employees. And, like, that's going to be an awkward conversation.
Hey, man, are you stalking this guy for years? So I want to ask you, I don't know a ton about police work. It seemed like the first, like, while well-intentioned, the first police officer did not do a very good job.
No. Well, at that point, there were, like, three different investigations, because at first they were just investigating, like, a missing persons.
Yes. And then were like, oh, it's a jilted lover. She ran away.
Yeah. And because they got that text to the mom that was like, I'm not missing. I just don't want to come home. And they were like, oh, case closed.
Yeah, that one. But I also kind of mean the second guy. Like, he staked out. He was trying to help these guys, but not once did he suspect anything other than a stalker, which with the details this person knew, and granted, I know police resources aren't infinite. I don't know. Like, these guys, the second set of guys, they looked at the IP addresses, and I was like, wait, that was an option the whole time? Why didn't they do this? Because immediately when they said that, I was like, even if they're using a VPN, you should see if there's any duplicates, and you can trace that. Like, this could have been solved so much quicker. They would have been like, the texts are coming from in your own house there, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah. I also liked that the tech guy, to look at the IP addresses more, like, efficiently, was like, I had to write, like, a new program to do this.
But while we were watching it, and my wife goes, yeah, you could have just used an Excel spreadsheet, like a pivot table.
Should have called me.
Yeah. I don't, like, I thought the second set of cops did a much better job because they were treating it as, like, probably either a missing person or a murder scene, because it is weird that this person's stalking someone and you happen to never see them and they've just disappeared. They looked at the credit card statements. And again, I was like, why wouldn't the first people have done, like, the first investigator done this to try and follow her movements? Because it is weird if your last set of payments was the last time anyone saw you alive.
Yeah, it was that last set of guys that were finally like, I don't think that this girl's alive anymore.
Yeah, this seems fishy. I feel bad for that girl. Like, I know why they did it for the documentary purposes. It makes it, like, the reveal shocking. But that poor girl, like, everyone is like, oh, this crazy lady. And then, it turns out she was, like, a victim.
No, you're right about them not doing a great job, because when they went back and they were like, we've had this car in, like, in evidence this whole time, and it wasn't until, like, years later that they were like, maybe we should check it for blood.
For blood, they had the picture of the... Granted, there's thousands of pictures in Liz's phone or Liv's phone, whatever, the crazy lady's phone, but the car was in there. Like, there were pieces that they had just missed, which is so unfortunate because it led to so much more harassment. One thing that I will say is also insane was the crazy lady shot herself.
Yeah, and shot herself in the leg.
And then she'd been getting away for this for so long. Like, she must have got arrogant and felt like, I'm tricking everyone, because the new set of police played her like a fiddle in those investigations where they're like, I need her to basically admit it on email. She's like, my name's Amy. I admit to killing this person. Here's where they're bought, you know? And it's like, whoa, lady, you are so confident that you're smarter than everyone else right now.
Yeah, she drank her own Kool-Aid. Like, that was absolutely crazy. They're like, we would really just need her to confess. And it's like, I confess.
I killed her. Amy.
I confess. Yeah, I'm Amy.
I'm Amy. I was not a part of it. I don't even know who this girl, Kara Lady, is. I killed her, though. Like, and I tried to kill Liz because of reasons. Oh my gosh, yeah. Insane. It's an insane story. Like, it's crazy. I also
like that the cops went to the guy and they were like, hey, you should move back in with your ex-girlfriend. And they're like,
yeah,
we're,
just to drive her crazy.
We're really hoping that this freaks her out. And I love that at least to the way it sounds in the documentary, the guy was not in on it at all. The cop just called him and was like, you should do this. And he was like, all right.
But Christian, they did that, and then they didn't have any plan. They're like, oh my god, she killed the innocent lady Amy. And it was like, wait a minute, you didn't have someone tracking her to see, like, what was going on? You kicked the hornet's nest and was like, good luck. Another thing, Christian, I have been led to believe by movies that if you shoot yourself, they can tell it by the angle of the gunshot wound. So couldn't they have also told it that way? I mean, they were clearly on to this woman at this point, but I don't know. It seems possible that they could have told that she shot herself. She would have had gunpowder on one of her hands.
Yeah. Yeah. I think at that point they were like, we know what this is. Like, we're not trying to. And that's why, like, they didn't go and arrest the other woman. Like, they were like, we're not trying to prosecute her for shooting herself in the leg. Like, we're trying to get her on murder.
Right. I did like the comment that one of the guys, the two partners, goes, he is the most flamboyant cowboy ever. He's probably never even been on a horse. And it was like this, like the one guy's in the total Western get up and all that. Like, I don't know. Those guys were awesome.
Yeah, I love that they made a point to be like, I don't think he's been on a horse, but he can pull off that cowboy hat. And then he spends the rest of the movie in the cowboy hat. Every time they interview him, he's in that enormous hat. And I was like, I feel like they had to go into this being like, we have to explain why he's wearing this.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I just assume that's how everyone in Arkansas or Nebraska, wherever this was, Kansas, dresses. Oklahoma. I have no idea what state this was. I know it was on the Iowa border, I think.
Yeah.
Boy, dude, this is I'm actually excited you picked this one. I did not know what this was. I thought, when I first looked it up, I was like, oh, is this some TV show or something? I was real confused. I thought it was going to be that or like a horror movie. This was a good true crime documentary, though.
Yeah, I was excited when I saw Netflix had brought this out, because like I said, I had kind of remembered, like I remembered enough that I knew that like the person that they thought was doing it was dead the whole time. But yeah, I did not know a lot of the like little details and all the twists and turns. Like, I had no idea about the IT grunt that was like aiding and abetting her.
So Christian, there's no budget or box office information about this. This is a Netflix original, but this has fared pretty well with critics. The Rotten Tomatoes scores for critics is 100% and audience is an 81%. I think I'd probably side with the audience on this one, or it's always hard to tell. This is only an hour and a half documentary, but I think this is definitely one worth checking out if you think it sounds interesting. What about you?
Oh yeah, I do too. I think it's well made, especially for a Netflix. I've been watching a lot of like streaming only true crime documentaries, and a lot of them are not very good. But this one I think is pretty solid, and it is only 90 minutes, so it gets to the point and gets through it without really bogging you down. I've watched a couple that are like three full episodes, and I'm like, this was too much.
Yeah, I think that was the downfall of that Cecil Hotel one or whatever that one was called, was that was like 4 hours and it could have probably been an hour. So yeah. I think this is the sweet spot for it. Hour and a half. You feel for, one, the woman who dies, mother and her son, the guy who was being harassed, that guy's wife. Like, it just, I think they did a good job of showing just how stalking, I mean, outside of murder, but stalking can just ruin someone's life and mental peace of mind. All right, Christian, this past week, you have also seen Madam Web. This is one I know almost nothing about. I've seen no previews for. I actually can't believe it's a movie. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on it.
So I recently heard this described as, this movie described as a cursed text, and I fully agree. I think it's like The Ring, where like it has to be shared. So let me ask you, do you want full spoilers for this? I don't know how interested you are in watching it in the future.
I think, do you have to spoil it to talk about how, like, how bad it is or whatever it is? Like, whatever it is, do you think you need to give spoilers? Because if so, go for it. I can't imagine, I know nothing about it, so I can't imagine what you're going to spoil for me.
Yeah, so it is terrible. Like, I was laughing the whole way through, but not because it's a comedy.
I was surprised to me because my only recollection of Madam Web from Spider-Man was in the cartoon where it was like an 80-year-old lady, and I was wondering how they would make this a movie.
Yeah, so it's weird. There's not a lot of translation from the comics, I think. They just kind of took names and did their own thing. Because in the comics, the character who's played by Sydney Sweeney in this is actually Madam Web. But Madam Web in the movie is Dakota Johnson, and Sydney Sweeney's just kind of no one. She's just some girl. So there is, I don't really even know where to begin with this. Dakota Johnson's mother, while 9 months pregnant with her, is in the Amazon researching a spider with like magical healing properties.
Oh my god, are they going the Morbius route?
Kind of. Oh, she's not sick herself, but she found out that Dakota Johnson, while still in the womb, has, I can't, like, fibromyalgia or something, some kind of like degenerative physical disorder. And so she goes in search of a magical healing spider to heal her like unborn child. Then while in the Amazon, she finds the spider, is immediately murdered by her assistant, who is the bad guy for the movie. Then she is rescued by a group, like a tribe of Peruvian Amazonian spider people.
What?
Who are like pink colored, like, do you know what like Majin Buu looked like in Dragon Ball?
Yes.
They're like that kind of color, like that bubblegum color, and they're covered in like black spider webbing.
Oh, so they, my god.
They take her to a cave. This is like the first 5 minutes of the movie. They take her to a cave where they let the spider bite her. The mother dies giving birth to Dakota Johnson, who then, I guess, has like innate future, like future seeing powers because of the spider bite.
As spider bites do.
But they don't unlock until she drowns in the Hudson River at like the age of 35.
What?
Until then, she's just a normal person. The guy, oh my God, the assistant, steals the spider and lets it bite him, and it gives him like super strength and like basically like normal Spider-Man powers. He gets strength, he gets wall climbing, but he also has the ability that he can kill people with a touch. He can like, I guess, envenomate you.
What?
By skin-to-skin contact. And he also kind of has future seeing power, where he just every night has a vision of Sydney Sweeney, Isabella Merced, and the other girl whose name is escaping me are all like spider women, like superheroes, and they all team up and murder him at some point in the future. And so the whole reason for the movie is that he's trying to kill these three girls before they can get powers and kill him. It is never addressed why they want to kill him in the future. Also, an enormous part of the marketing for this movie revolved around the three girls being like spider women. They never get powers in this movie. The only time they're in costume and the only time they have powers are in his like dream sequence flash forwards.
Really? That's crazy. So the one girl just can see the future. That's it, and that's the whole movie, her fighting Spider-Man, essentially.
Yeah, evil Spider-Man. Yeah, she keeps seeing him killing her and the other girls, and then she'll, like, flash back to the present, and she'll be like, all right, now I know how we can win that fight. She hits people with cars over and over. She hits him with a taxi, then she hits him with an ambulance, both stolen.
Should have hit him with a semi. Did it kill him? Did you smush him like a spider?
Nope, he just keeps coming back. He eventually does get killed by a Pepsi sign.
How much do you think Pepsi paid for that product placement?
Dude, it's a lot. Like, there's a couple scenes where she's drinking a Pepsi and it's, like, prominently, like, displayed. Like, the logo is directly facing the camera. So, it gets better. So, Adam Scott is in this.
Really?
He never gets a last name. They call him Ben. He is Peter Parker's uncle, Ben Parker.
So, wait, this takes place in the past?
Yeah, this is set in 2003.
Okay.
It was, I guess, supposed to tie in with the Tom Holland Spider-Man originally, and then the script got, like, all rewritten, and it just doesn't tie into anything now. It's not even part of, like, the Sony Morbius universe. It's just its own thing.
As my next question was, is this part of Morbius? But I guess not. Wow, what a lot of terrible decisions.
Emma Roberts is in this as Spider-Man's mom, like Peter Parker's mom. She never gets named, and they have the baby in, like, the right after, like, the climax is there at the hospital, and Emma Roberts is giving birth, and they're like, what do you think we should name him? And it, like, it cuts away. So they never actually say the name Peter Parker.
John Parker. It's totally different people. Different universe.
Yeah, it's bananas.
I thought you were going to say Ben was like Ben Parker or something, which I think is the clone Spider-Man from the terrible, like, clone saga, but guess not.
One of my favorites is, at a certain point, Dakota Johnson is like, I have to figure out why my mom went to the Amazon all those years ago while I was pregnant. So she, in the middle of the movie, takes a week-long trip to Peru, leaves the three girls in New York with Adam Scott, and is like, hopefully the bad guy doesn't find and kill you.
Flies. I should leave New York.
Yeah, exactly. Flies to Peru and then meets one of the spider people that was there when her mom gave birth, and he's no longer pink. He's no longer covered in spider webs. He's just like a guy in a button-down shirt.
What? Do they never address that?
Nope. He's like, I knew you'd be back someday.
Maybe that was a reshoot there.
I burst out laughing. Oh, man.
That's crazy. So, Christian, better or worse? And if so, in what way than Morbius? Because Morbius was bad.
Better. Morbius was so dumb, and it was fun to, like, make fun of how, like, excited Sony was about it. And it was funny that they tried to re-release it. But this is, like, this is on another level. This is, like, instant cult classic to me. I think it's so funny.
That's high praise for such a bad movie. Do you know how this has fared at the box office? Because I've read a lot of headlines about it. I've not heard too many people have actually seen it.
So the Rotten Tomatoes is kind of stunning. It's got a 12% from the critics. It's got a 57% from the audience.
The audience likes it for what it is, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I would wager that they're probably all in the same camp as me. So on the box office side, its budget was $80 million.
Honestly, for a modern superhero movie, that seems pretty low.
It's not terrible, but it's been out 2 weeks, and it's worldwide only made $77 million. Its domestic is $35 million.
I mean, it might make its budget back, but yeah, that is not great. It is funny that, like, we've been talking about Marvel fatigue and superhero fatigue, and the MCU movies have been, I think, disappointing to their standards. But then you have the DC movies, which the last one, I think, was the Aquaman movie, and before that was the Flash movie, and I tried to watch Flash, and it was so bad I turned off after 20 minutes.
That's what I've heard.
But, like, it seems like Sony's on another level with just making their own weird Spider-Man adjacent bad universe. With Venom was, like, okay, and even Venom 2 was fun for what it was, but then you have Morbius, and you have this, which I guess isn't part of the universe, and then the hint that I totally forget the name of the Falcon guy. The Vulture. Craven? The Vulture.
Oh, Vulture.
Who might be out there, and, like, the Sinister Six. I have honestly no idea what Sony is doing with this property. It makes no sense.
No, I think they're just... This might be one of those situations where, like, you have to generate content every so often or you lose the rights.
It has to be something like that, but you'd think they would do something better. Like, I don't know if because they let Tom Holland play Spider-Man when they have movie rights, if they, part of that, they agree that they're no longer making Spider-Man movies, but you could essentially make Spider-Man with Venom or something like that, or go into the Ultimate Universe with Miles Morales, which they did in the into the Spider-Verse series, which, I mean, has been well-received.
Yeah.
But it just seems like in their live actions, they could be doing something better. Like, Spider-Man is 8 million villains and side characters.
Yeah. So I will leave you with this. This is a list on Twitter. It said, all of these events happen in Madame Web. So, first is Madame Web is born in a cave in Peru with the help of magic spider people. The three spider women never get powers and are only seen in costumes during dream sequences. Evil Spider-Man is killed by a large Pepsi sign.
That's still my favorite that you told me.
Madame Web becomes wanted for kidnapping by the NYPD. Madame Web.
What?
She saves the three girls and then the police think that she's kidnapped them.
Oh, man.
Madame Web runs down Evil Spider-Man in her car twice. Peter Parker is born but not named. Madame Web inexplicably splits into three ghost-like copies of herself to save the girls at the end of the movie. And when she goes back to Peru, one of the spider people tells her that if she can learn the power, she can be in multiple places at once by controlling, like, the web of the universe or something, and so she does that. Then she gets hit in the face by a firework, kind of. It, like, bounces off of the side of her face, and that ends up blinding and paralyzing her.
Oh, my... Ew, really, at the end?
Yeah. Yeah, in the last scene, the three girls come and visit her, and she's got, like, almost like a Cyclops visor sunglasses on, and she's in a wheelchair.
They should have did something better. Like, that bit, yeah, oh boy. Okay, I guess that is closer to her comic design from what I remember, or at least the animated 90s cartoon. Dude, when you said she splits herself into three... The first thing that came to mind is I watched The Waterboy for the first time in probably two decades or 25 years, like a long time, 2 or 3 weeks ago when I was on vacation. And that one guy who goes like, you can do it, you can cut their head off or whatever, is just that guy, like that guy telling Madame Web she can do it, like, you can do it, you can split yourself into three parts, Madame Web. Rob Schneider, I think, played that guy. Oh my gosh, that's insane.
I've been living for the tweets. Like, I had gotten rid of my Twitter for a while, and I'm so happy I got it back just because the Madame Web discourse has been incredible.
Thought you could kick the habit, then Madame Web came out and you came right back.
Pulled me right back in with her web.
I think Elon probably funded Madame Web to try and drive users to Twitter. All right, Christian, you had watched that. I've not really committed to anything. I started Helldivers 2 for the PlayStation, which has been getting a lot of headlines. It's pretty fun. It's like a take or a spoof of a spoof, I guess. It's heavily inspired by Starship Troopers, where you're just like part of a super patriotic, like kind of dumb tongue-in-cheek comedy that you just go to planets and you're just killing a bunch of bugs for freedom. It's pretty fun. I haven't played a multiplayer game in a long time, so it's pretty cool to drop into. It does not give you a lot of instruction, so for the first like 4 or 5 missions, I was getting crushed because I had no idea what I was even supposed to be doing. So bit of a learning curve. And then the other one was I started the Metroidvania. It's the newest Prince of Persia game. It's called Prince of Persia The Lost Crown. It's no longer in like a 3D game. It's a 2D side scroll Metroid / Castlevania. Like, it is really good. It's more challenging than I think I would have anticipated it, but man, I am really enjoying that one. That one's going to definitely get platinumed by me. And then the newest thing I started watching that I'm most excited about, and you might have watched this, I'm not sure. I've never watched anything on the Sci-Fi Network, but I saw recommendations for the show called Eureka, and I've watched the first 2.5 episodes.
Oh, man.
And it is exactly the type of like kind of cheesy procedural show that I wanted.
Yes.
So you've watched that?
Loved Eureka back in the day. We can talk about it when you hit like season four, because I've got strong opinions about where it goes, but those first several seasons I absolutely loved.
I'm so excited to start it. I don't remember what I Googled, because I was like, I want to find like a procedural, like white collar burn notice.
Yeah.
And someone was like, oh, this is like Doctor Who, but for Americans or something, where I think they explained it that it was like Doctor Who was cleaning up dumb people messes and Eureka was a dumb guy cleaning up smart people messes.
Yeah, so that like, sounds right.
Yeah, so I was like, I'll check it out. And man, it's like from the mid-2000s. It's like everything I want from one of these shows. Like the like iPhones aren't really out yet. Like I like just seeing what people were like, oh, this is like really smart people stuff. Like, what are they coming up with? And then it's like they, you know, they're using like old style cell phones, but they're creating fusion reactors. It's just crazy, man.
I started with my fiance, Death and Other Details. It's on Hulu with Mandy Patinkin. And it's like a Death on the Nile style.
Oh, yeah. Kind of. I still got to watch this.
It's still coming out. There's like maybe three episodes left in the season. It comes out every Tuesday. And so far, it's awesome. I'm totally locked into it.
I need to put that on my short list. That, Only Murders in the Building, I still got to watch season three, I think it is, because they announced season four, and then Jack Reacher season two are like my short list of things that I do need to finish. But I'm in Eureka mode right now. I am digging it.
Yeah, I'm excited for you. I did really like that show back in the day.
I thought the guy who's the main actor was going to be in more stuff because he looks familiar, but I looked at his like acting credits and I did not recognize him in anything else.
He makes Maytag commercials now.
Maybe I've seen that. I didn't even know Maytag was still a brand.
He plays like washers and dryers and things in commercials.
Nice. Still working. Okay, anything else, Christian?
No, I just think it's funny. Every time I see one of those commercials, I'm like, yeah, it's the sheriff from Eureka again.
He's trying to sell me a washer and dryer.
getting that bread.